In the beginning of the Vietnam War, it was piston-powered airplanes pretty much exclusively were doing recon. The O-1, which or the L-19 Bird Dog, and then that was replaced by the O-2 over here, and later on, the OV-1. And we've got some people here to talk about them. First of all, we're going to talk about the one that everybody remembers was the OV-1. Interesting-looking airplane, interesting flying airplane, and had an interesting service record. We have three people here. Ed Finnegan, who is the Warbird director, who's been helpful in putting this together. And then we have John Williams, who is a pilot in Vietnam, and Tom Bitters. You flew the other side of the airplane, didn't you? You're the one that made it work. So let's first of all ask John, would you like to speak to us and tell us a little bit about the airplane and what it did?
Well, I can't say I'm an authority on it, but the prototype first flew in late 1959.
All right, how's that? That sounds better from up here. The airplane first flew in 1959, and by the mid-60s, they were already involved in Vietnam, and about 390 or so were produced. In Vietnam, we used them primarily for visual reconnaissance, visual photo work. We did some infrared work at night, and a considerable amount of side-looking airborne radar work over southern Laos, northern Cambodia. The airplane was a pleasure to fly. It flies very well. It's a fun airplane to fly. It's a handful on one engine, particularly at low speeds. But other than that, we didn't have too many problems with it. It would suffer a great deal of damage and still keep flying. I've seen videos, at least, of one that came back with a hole blown through the rear of the fuselage at the speed boards and went completely through. Cocked and tilted the tailplane, and they still flew it home and landed without hydraulics. That's one of the quirks of the airplane. It has manual ailerons, manual rudder, and manual elevators. It has hydraulic inboard ailerons, hydraulic flaps, brakes, landing gear, speed brakes, and of all things, windshield wipers. They were a problem once, but we got through that all right. Otherwise, any specific questions or any ideas or comments, I can try and answer most of your questions. I spent the first 6 months of my tour flying SLAR missions over Laos and Cambodia, and finally saw the place in the daylight when we took off one afternoon to do an infrared checkout, and then spent the last 6 months flying infrared missions, mostly in two-core Southern I-Corps, and with an occasional VR mission thrown in during the daytime.
Any other?
Go ahead. Yep. I have seen the figure and I've forgotten it. I'm sorry. There were a number of them lost in Vietnam and Laos. We lost many to anti-aircraft fire, nearly as many to what is now called controlled flight into terrain. VR airplanes and infrared airplanes trying to get into a target area in inclement weather and trying to get underneath and be able to run the targets. But on the right wing is an infrared jammer pod. It has actually a little jet engine in it that creates a hot exhaust. It goes out through diffusers and gets pulsed and changed around and confuses the seeker on the missile. Those came by after my time. I can't be too much more specific than that, except they are still in use in some cases. On the left side is a radar jammer. We never used those in Vietnam or had them in Vietnam. We had the detection gear to tell us when we were being tracked and from where, but it was up to us to make the evasive maneuvers and get out.
Tom, do you want to add it? You're the wizzo.
Yeah, my sole purpose was to get him over there to do his job, and they did quite a job.
You don't mind being called a wizzo, do you?
Actually, we were called TOs, or technical observers. That was the Army's term for us.
And you were civilians, and you didn't go anywhere except South Vietnam, right? Okay.
Yeah, that's about the way it worked. You had asked how many were lost. I think I read somewhere that roughly 70 or so were lost in Vietnam. I was a TO, technical observer. That was a term they used for us. I was attached to the 244 Surveillance Airplane Company stationed at Canto Army Airfield down in the middle of the Delta in Vietnam. I flew mostly SLAR for about the first 6 months of my tour. The last part of my tour was in early 1970, spring of 70. We started going into Cambodia then, so I flew a lot of daylight visual reconnaissance and photo reconnaissance missions in about the southern third of Cambodia. We made it all the way up to just south of Phnom Penh and all the way from the Gulf of Siam over to the Parrot's Peak. This is a D model. It came out after my time when John and I were in Vietnam. We were flying the A, Bs, and Cs. The B was the SLAR ship. The C was the IR ship. I flew mostly SLAR. The system, side-looking airborne radar, it had an 18-foot-long radar antenna attached to the lower right fuselage. If I remember right, I think it had about a 60-mile range on either side of the aircraft. It could pick up anything moving over 3.5 miles an hour. So if I had a VC riding a bicycle down a rice dike 50 miles out or so, I could pick them up on radar. Missions we flew probably, if I remember right, about 5,000 to 9,000 feet somewhere in there, John. 7,000 feet or so was about the optimum altitude. Infrared, you know a little bit more about that. I didn't fly. How much? About 1,500. And the photo missions, we flew at about 1,000 feet and 1,000 to 1,250 feet. The A's and C's had two cameras, had a 12-inch belly camera that was capable of looking straight down or 15 or 30 degrees oblique to the side. And if it had it was a 12-inch format. If it had a nose camera, you can see where the lens is. It was usually a 6-inch. It was a 6-inch panoramic camera. Other than that, I guess I'm open to questions. Yes, sir. I believe in 1996, 97, the last ones were retired.
Just a question from a civilian standpoint. Who owns these, Ed?
They're all in private hands. They're all in private hands, either private owners or museums. This particular aircraft is owned by Dr. Joe Massessa.
I think Joe's here, isn't he? Did I see Joe Massessa? Is he here?
He's right there.
Okay. Thank you for bringing it. Let me ask you a question. What's your fuel burn?
On the way here at 20,000 feet, I got it down about 97 gallons an hour. I was very happy about that. Usually about 125 gallons an hour.
Doesn't take much to make you happy, does it?
It's fun. That's my goal. But anyway, my goal is to preserve this for all the men and women who worked on this and everything they did. And these things need to be preserved and flown. And this is a great model. This is a good example of one. It never left the country, actually. It was a trainer model. And Ed, maybe you flew this one at Huachuca or somewhere. A lot of the guys out here flew this bird.
It was operated after Vietnam. You flew them in Korea, didn't you?
That's correct. This particular one is a D model, as Tom mentioned. It combined everything, all the surveillance equipment from the A's, the B's, and the C's. So the photographic cameras, the SLAR boom, the infrared system were all contained in one airframe. You could just swap out the components very, very quickly. This aircraft, the D models were used both in Korea, Germany, Central America, Desert Shield, Desert Storm as well.
Thank you.